Chapter 4. The second compliance of Genna, or what imperial histories would later call the Genna Scouring, was a very different war for the Eaters of Worlds in many ways. For the first time since his discovery on Nuceria, the Legion's Primarch would watch from orbit as they made planetfall without him. But even in absentia, his presence was felt. Their father's shadow loomed over them all, as each of their hearts beat in rhythm to his countdown. The commanders had grown accustomed by then to formulating the stratagems of attack and leading the briefings alone. Angron rarely attended any of them long enough to contribute anything beyond a distracted, snarling indifference before stalking from sight. But now the World Eaters would take to the battlefield without their Gene Sire's inhuman prowess to inspire them, to drive them to new heights by so thoroughly dominating his environment, it was as though he needed no Legion at all. This would also mark the first hostile planetfall in the Legion's history, where the 12th would commence ground operations without incurring any casualties. High magnification orbital picked feeds from the fleet above, beamed in real time into the visors of commanders, revealed no weapons batteries poised to fill the air with exploding flak, nor did they display any of the chaos and confusion that possessed major population centres in the midst of mobilising defenders and massed evacuations. Life on Genna appeared to continue as it always had, seemingly unaware of the fact that the sky had caught fire with an invasion by the most terrifying weapon ever created by the human race. The starkest departure of them all, however, would be the reality on the ground. Bursting from drop pods and charging down the assault ramps of gunships, the 12th Legion rapidly established security perimeters at their respective landing zones. Recon squads ranged out and lines of communication were solidified between adjacent units as companies organised and cohered. Even without the fleet actions and defence networks the 12th were accustomed to overcoming, time was a constant factor. The sheer coordination and effort required to deliver thousands of space marines into a theatre of battle was gargantuan and never a swift enterprise. Now, on the surface, and with every eye glancing at the hours ticking away in their chronos, the order was given to advance. 26 hours remained. It has been widely recorded, both in the recounting of remembrances during the Great Crusade and within each Legion's own archival histories, how Space Marines made battle. It was said that most often the Iron Hands entered combat in silence, their minds devoid of any distraction and focused entirely on the cold, clinical violence they were poised to deliver. Others, like the Sons of Russ or the Khan's White Scars, joined the fray in a blistering charge, laughing as they levelled bolter and blade. For the 12th, however, this had not been their way. Since the day of the Warhound's founding, whether the foe before them was Xenos, Machine, or even the Emperor's own Thunder Warriors, the 12th commenced hostilities according to their own fashion. Theirs was the only method more terrifying to an enemy than the sight of a legionary sprinting towards them, light gleaming from their raised weapon, with a bellow tearing from their throat. The Warhounds, and the World Eaters they became, reached the range of their blades walking. No robotic silence or hysterical shouts rang out from their ranks, but rather the calm, even tones of bonded brothers, spoken as though they were strolling to the training pits and not into the teeth of their foes. Rare were the times when an assaulting centurion sped his phalanx to meet the enemy at a trot, and almost never at a run. They simply marched, imbued with an easy, natural aggression, and did not alter their stride as they struck, rolled through, cut and crushed any foe that dared stand against them, relentless and indomitable as the fall of shadow over the land at nightfall. By this tactic had the Legion defeated countless enemies before they had even engaged them. Such was the fear sown by this inhuman calm. It was only when the enemy broke, all morale and cohesion shattered as they turned to flee, that the 12th quickened their pace. In the final pursuit, Running down and executing a routed enemy, the Legion was in every way the Hound of War to match their former title, and later, just as fittingly, those who devour whole planets. Yet here, there was no enemy to meet them upon their landing grounds. The World Eaters moved unopposed across the rocky, storm-blasted terrain of Genna, seeing no sign of life until they reached the gates of its shining cities, which yawned open and unprotected in the face of thousands of invading space marines. Gathered just outside the gates, standing in silent tranquility, were the ones who would meet the Legion. The Genans had no weapons. They had no army. They had their population. Millions of people, every one of them the same hairless, androgynous makeup as the emissary's owner had been, ushered forth from behind the walls of their metropolises. No fear soured their expressions, and no adrenaline shook their limbs. They simply walked forward to meet the World Eaters, as though greeting friends, smiling, without a trace of malice. 23 hours remained. At first, confusion reigned. The front ranks of World Eaters merely shoved the docile Genans back, unsure of how to proceed. The legionaries sought to clear a path to march into the cities and lay claim to their central spires, but found themselves awash in a press of false humanity. As more and more of the population came forward, by sheer numbers they began to slow the Legion, and then, slowly but surely, they began to push back. Scouts voxed unit commanders, giving reports of seeing men and women wrap themselves around the limbs of the World Eaters, their placid expressions unchanged as they sought to drag the transhumans down beneath their weight. Majo had never faced the like before, yet he had waged war all his life, and when presented with the unknown, he placed his confidence in his weapons. And the greatest weapon he wielded was the phalanx. The 12th Legion phalanx was a devastating force on any battlefield, often imitated but never bested. Nothing better exemplified the Legion, and the brotherhood that defined it, than rank upon rank of warriors, brothers bonded by being chained together in the training pits, moving and killing as a single unit. It was an impenetrable formation, where a legionary's shield was not meant to protect himself, but the brother fighting at his elbow. It was a methodical killing machine, and a thorough one. They left none alive, ever. The taking of captives and prisoners never entered a centurion of the 12th's considerations as he planned a campaign or readied his brothers to charge. Such matters were not the purpose of the legions. They were a blade, directed at a throat they had been created to cut, not capture. Such was the force at Majo's disposal. With the Genan capital of Malkoia before him, he led a wall of shields into a sea of millions of tranquil faces.
"For Angron and the Emperor!"
bellowed the centurion. Spears snapped down into the forward position, locking into the vertical slots cut into their heavy shields. The unbroken continued their march as the Genan multitudes walked into range of their spears, and the killing began. From the centre of the shield wall, Majo drove his spear forward and back, in union with his veteran front rankers. Their hafts sang against their shields as the phalanx reaped life from the mob. The Genans fell, both dead and wounded, without sound, those behind them continuing to walk forward, oblivious to trampling the bodies of the people whose synthetic blood splashed their faces.
"Steady now! Keep the advance!"
bellowed Majo, his spear never ceasing. The gap ahead of the shield wall vanished. More and more Genans came forward, spilling out of the gates. The pressure crushing against his shield was mounting, as if they were holding back the weight of an ocean's rising tide.
"It isn't hard to kill them,"
snarled Orontes, amber fluid jetting across his faceplate as he drove his spear into the sea of blank faces.
"It's killing enough of them for it to make a difference. They aren't even fighting us. What honour can be found in this?" "Oh, the songs they'll sing," said Hanno,
sending bodies sprawling with a quick blow from his shield to be crushed underfoot. Forward progress began to stall, Major grunted as a swarm of Genons laid themselves over his spear, their combined weight snapping it in two. He dropped the half he held, replacing it with his Volkite Serpenta. A concentrated blast from the weapon carved a channel of burning ash through the crowd, yawning for a moment before it was filled in.
"Imagine then the dishonour of being killed by them, brothers," said Major, holstering the pistol and drawing his axe. "And redouble your efforts."
Within the first hours, countless gallons of inhuman lifeblood had been emptied onto the ground, reducing it to a churning, yellowed quagmire. Legionaries sank shin-deep into the sludge as they killed, building great mounds of dead before them. When the heaps of the slain grew higher than the shield wall, the Genons simply climbed atop it and fell onto the world-eaters from above. The advance of the phalanx, slowed to a halt, was now reversing. Gaps were being forced between legionaries by the mounting tangle of corpses. Shields were weighed down with the dead and pulled aside by dozens of grasping hands. One by one, warriors began to disappear. Flatlines pulsed insistently at the corner of Major's retinal display as his veteran front rankers were overwhelmed and isolated, buried beneath hundreds of bodies until they were crushed to death. A cry of pain and anger echoed over the vox as one veteran's helm was torn free and his eyes gouged out. And all the while, above the growing tally, the clock continued to shrink. 19 hours remained. Order was disintegrating. A single mortal was no match for a legionary. But what about 100? Or 1,000? Or more? At what point did the pendulum swing against the Space Marine's favour? The scale of the violence was galling, even to Major. His legion had entered this conflict unprepared for millions of enemies who advanced without any thought of survival and were utterly unaffected by morale. For every Genon they killed, 100 more came on to take their place, still an unbroken stream coming from within their cities. The battle, if the slaughter surrounding them could be called such, had rapidly approached the point where the tide was beginning to turn.